This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Welcome to Hey YA, a Book Riot podcast covering young adult literature, from great new books to favorite classic reads, from new stories to the latest in on-screen adaptations. Hey YA is here to elevate the exciting world of young adult lit. I'm your host, Erica Ezzafetti, and I'm here today with someone a little different. We're mixing it up. We're keeping it cute. I'm here today with managing editor Vanessa Diaz. Hi, Vanessa.
Hello. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. I love pretending like we didn't just talk for 15 minutes whenever I jump on a podcast. It's my favorite thing.
It's so much fun. Like, oh my God, did you just come in? Like, hi, how are you?
It's great. But yeah, you always got to do a little bit of a little banty banter in the beginning, which is, you know, it's fun. Old
bantery banter. Yeah. So it's we have an exciting show today. You know, we're going to be talking about Black YA books. First, a little news and a bit of an announcement, you know?
Yeah, I just really quickly want to obviously call out that, you know, today our regular host, Tirza Price, isn't on the show. And that's because Tirza has moved on from Book Riot. Her last show was the one that went up last week. She stole one of the books I was going to talk about today, but that's okay. spread the love. But no, we wish her all the best. She was with Book Riot for a long time. She was a contributor and contributing editor for, I think, 8 years.
That's wild.
So yeah, going on to do more stuff. Make sure you go read her really, really great books. The Pride and Prejudice remix that she does is so good. And I think it's now in its like third or fourth iteration. Yeah, she's got something new
coming out later this year, I think.
Oh, so much fun. Pride and Premeditations.
Big things
was the first one,
poppin'. Yes, yeah. Pride and Premeditations. Yeah.
Of course, I was on the spot like, oh my gosh, I can't remember the book name. But anyway, we wish her all the best and thank you for her time with us. But yeah, I get to have some fun and hop on the podcast with you today. And that's never a bad thing.
I'm saying so. We are going to have a lot of fun. First, let's get into some interesting little news stories. We have a few little things to talk about. One, in random news. Florida has banned a Ripley's Believe It or Not book. Like, I don't know why. Like, okay, girl. And Ripley's is like, you know what? We're going to give these books away to people. So if you're a Florida resident, up until May 15th this year, you can apply to get the free book. You just need a Florida address. Listen, I'll take it.
Yeah. As my friend would say, some great news coming out of Florida is a good thing. So a lot of Floridians down bad in my life right now, but this is some good news. Yeah, that's great.
Oh my
goodness. Good for Ripley's. The book ban stuff it's like hard to keep up with at this point because it's just so ubiquitous, but I'm glad that folks are doing what they can to counter it, and yay Ripley's, go get you a free book.
Yes, absolutely. And in some news where I keep forgetting that Ben and Jerry's is about that life.
I keep waiting for them to disappoint me because that is how the world has done a lot of us. But no, they're consistently on like the right side of things on top of making delicious ice cream.
Even when it's not cool, like they were doing it before.
Yeah.
It was, you know what I mean? They Absolutely. Have been about that. I'm like, Ben and Jerry, y'all are invited to the cookout, but I get tired of people saying
I can tell.
Erase, forget that I said that. Ben and Jerry's, y'all are real cool. You know?
Very cool.
So they came across an article where they're talking about how people are trying to erase Black History Month. Florida. Not just Florida, though.
No, unfortunately not.
Other places, too. So there is a great article they have talking about what you can do to fight against it. They have some history on it, some context. They're talking about this tour they went on with Colin Kaepernick about giving away banned books in Florida. I give Florida. Bless
Sorry,
her heart.
Florida. We love you. But, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's really interesting. I'll link that in the show notes. So that's pretty cool.
I liked it because they did if you ask anybody Book Riot, specifically people like Kelly Jensen, who cover the censorship beat with such a regular cadence, this is not new news, right? It's really been going on for years and years. And for better or worse, people are kind of starting to pay more attention now, which is obviously a good thing, but also it's like, where you been? But I do like that Ben and Jerry's in this piece took like a really accessible, just being like, okay, here, you know, I think it's five things that they related.
Yes.
And just made it very to the point. Like, here's the thing. It's accessible. Here's why this is bad. Tackling everything from banning AP courses on African American studies to CRT, which, as they point out, is like a really big, you know, people are, oh, you can't teach it in schools. And they're like, we don't teach it in K-2. No one is asking like a kindergartner college to open up the 1619 project. Like, stop. Yeah. But anyway, great ice cream. Great people, as far as we can tell. Go check that out, though. It's I think, really digestible in case you are really sort of just coming into the consciousness about what's going on. Here you go. Here's a nice primer.
This is digestible. This is their ice cream. I don't know why it made me laugh. You said, great people, great ice cream.
I'm out here auditioning for a sponsorship, apparently. Listen, I'm not, but
listen, Ben and Jerry, one of y'all, both of y'all, if y'all want to,
I love me some tonight, though. I'm just going to say.
A little Jerry Garcia.
Jerry's going to, yeah.
That's what it's called. Yeah. So Ben and Jerry, you know what? Shout them out. Okay, so I don't know if you saw this coming. I didn't see this coming, but Libby, which is the app that you can check out ebooks and audiobooks from your public library, local public library through, Libby is hosting Libby Book Awards. They've already given the book awards a nickname. They're like, oh, she's called Libby's.
Here we are.
Yeah.
Libby is great. Like, I'm glad to see them doing, because obviously they have a lot of information on like the books that get checked out. I personally, like, so much of my reading is done on Libby.
Oh, absolutely.
We'll obviously provide links to like all of the stuff here. But yeah, they announced at the top of the, I think of like a top of the month really is when they first announced that this was happening. And we have reported on it at bookriot.com too. You actually wrote a piece on it because there's a lot of good to celebrate here.
Yes.
And then there's a thing.
Well, choices. Choices were made.
Libby, we love you, pero.
So. Yes, I'm doing heart hands at you, Libby. Like, I'm down for you, girl. Yes, absolutely. However.
So yeah, they did with 17 categories in total, including some of the stuff you might expect to see in a book award. So there's finalists for best adult fiction, adult nonfiction, YA, audiobook, of course. Would be very surprised if they didn't do audiobook, debut author. And, you know, again, lots of great titles. And this is the part that I feel so funny about, is that within each of those categories, I see a fair amount of diversity, which is great. And then they actually made a category called Best Diverse Author. This is where the chin hands. You and I are both people that if you put us in a room, that group might be considered diverse. I am not a diverse. You are not a diverse.
I am not a singular diverse. No.
And then, as you know, you pointed out in the piece that you wrote for Book Riot as well, it's like, well, what does that exactly mean? Are we referring to race? Are we referring to ethnicity? Are we referring to gender identity? Like, questions. And it's sort of, again, I don't mean to, I feel like we were both on the same page when I was reading your piece, but it feels like it contributes more to an othering in a way that, not, you know, it's great when there's awards that are for specific, like, or for Latinx literature or for, you know, Black literature. But this is very just like, for all the diverses, you go, diverses. Ethnics. Here you go.
Some ethnics in here. Liven it up.
Plus, like, other, because I don't believe Annalee Newitz is a BIPOC author. But, like, again, so it's like, are we just saying, if you be marginalized, come and crush a cup of wine. Sorry, I just recently watched Romeo and Juliet. Anyway, so
that's amazing.
Again, the piece that sort of breaks my brain a little is that overall the award, compared to so many award lists, even in, you know, the year of our Lord 2024, which are still very non-diverse, their list, from what I could tell, is actually pretty diverse.
It's mostly diverse. Romance, you know, but like everywhere else, it's like, it's not startlingly, pretend I said that word correctly. It's not shockingly non-diverse, each group, each category of these books.
Correct.
They're pretty decent. So it's like, what was the reason? Yeah. What was the reason? In the words of the wise Cardi B.
Indeed.
Belle Calise. Yeah,
I get the idea. I don't know that the execute. Yeah, I think really if you could have completely just scrapped that category at the last second and instead just gone with what we like to do as a practice of book writing, right? Which is just to say that, hey, like people of color and other marginalized entities just need to be in the room. We need a seat at the table. And as long as that is being recognized when you're doing these roundups of awards, that is the work, at least to me. Like, again, it's great to highlight these folks like in these very individual awards that we have in lots of different categories. That's great. But to just to be like the diverse for me anyway.
Yeah, I also think it invites ridicule. Obviously, we're critiquing it, but we're critiquing it from a certain standpoint. We're critiquing it as people who support diversity and think, you know, see the value of it and the need for it. And I kind of just feel like it. I mean, you know, the other group of people who don't see it and, you know, anti-woke and all that, they have issues with things regardless. But I also feel like because it doesn't make sense, it just makes a point for them more, which might be a minor point. I mean, like I said, they're going to stay mad anyway, but.
True.
Yeah. So I'm going to be tuned in to Libby, but I do wonder what she was thinking, but we'll see. We'll see how that goes. It does look, again, like a pretty decent list throughout. And of course, like I said, they have, or like you said, they have a young adult category, and there are some pretty good ones on there, like The Blackwoods by Brandi Colbert, The Davenports by Crystal Marquise, Divine Rivals, Warrior Girl on Earth, What the River Knows, which are all really great titles. So we'll see. We'll see how it shakes out.
I love the covers for every single one of the books nominated, too. They're just, not that that's the reason they were nominated, but so good. Yeah,
maybe partially. Great. Covers are important. I don't know.
They are. Yeah. They are. Don't let anybody tell you they don't matter. There's a whole industry behind them. But yeah.
Literally.
Excellent. Excellent covers. I don't think I've actually read any of these in spite of owning four of them. So
right. Same. Well, I've started a lot of them. Such is life.
That's how it goes.
Yes.
So that's pretty much the news we wanted to cover today. We are going to get into what I promise I'm going to try to be brief in my descriptions of some of my favorite recent Black YA, but I make no promise.
Listen.
Looked at my notes and I was like, oh, I'm going to need to shorten these on the fly. We can call it passion, but yeah, that's what we're going to do today.
I've read a couple of yours that you listed, and yes, I agree. They are very good. I love them. The ones that I read of yours. Mm-hmm.
Before we talk about those books, I'm going to tell you about something that I am personally very, very proud of, and that is that 2024 is the 10th year of the Read Harder Challenge. Join us as we make our way through 24 tasks that are meant to expand your reading horizons and diversify your TBR. To get book recommendations for each task, you just have to sign up for the newly revamped Read Harder newsletter. And if you become a paid subscriber, you get even more recommendations, plus community features where you can connect with a community of really passionate and like-minded readers in what our editor, Danica Ellis, is calling a cozy and supportive corner of the internet. And wow, are they right. I have been in those comments. It's like, look at how pleasant, lovely, and readerly this space is. So it's a really good time. We're really proud of how long this product has persisted and how passionate people are about participating in the challenge every year. So visit bookriot.com/readharder to sign up. Again, that's bookriot.com/readharder.
Yes, it is a cozy, little cozy corner of the internet.
We love us some cozy.
Yes, it's very pleasant. Okay, so Vanessa, I see from the notes that you have, I think this is a new one by LaSalle Sanbury.
New-ish, yeah. Let's see, when did I go? Yeah, I went to a book event for this last year, so I've owned it for some time and just, like, hadn't gotten to it. Talk about another, like, fantastic cover. If we want to kind of just kick off, shall I start talking about my first pick?
Yes, please.
Awesome. So LaSalle Sanbury is the author of the Blood Like Magic books, and I got to see her in conversation with Aiden Thomas at my local Powell's, which is a lot of fun, and immediately like had to buy this book because, again, the cover is fantastic. It was being pitched and is as Haunting of Hill House meets Sadie, and I was like, let's do this. So it's about two girls in two different timelines. First, we meet Daisy, who at the start of the book is like eating at a diner, and it's clear she's been there for a really long time. Like, my coffee has long gone cold and is maybe curdling, and also how slowly can one eat a piece of pie kind of long. Like, what is she doing here? We soon learn that she's lurking. She's there to spy on the boyfriend who just broke up with her. He is, I think, like across the street in like a much fancier sort of Instagrammable breakfast brunch location. And she's there to watch him with his new girlfriend, who's this very, you know, ostensibly Western beauty standards, pretty white girl in a bandage dress, and like long straight blonde hair. And she's in her head feeling very like she is everything that I'm not. Is this what he wanted the whole time? Was he using me sort of thing? Replaying all that in her head, having a bad time. And another thing, oh, by the way, she kind of sees dead people.
Oh,
and they're not particularly friendly more often than not. So she's having, again, a bad time. And so when her mom inherits a secluded mansion in Northern Ontario, this takes place in Canada. And it's this house where she remembers like spending her childhood summers. And so she's like, yes, let's do that. Let's get out of here. But the house is not exactly what she was hoping it would be. And then in the second timeline, we get a whole decade later, Brittany, who is, I can't remember if it's interning technically, but working at this media company who basically tapped her and her bestie on their shoulders when their web series called Haunted went like wildly viral. But of course, now that they're working there, all of that excitement that they had for their series is turned into like microaggressions all the way down. And their boss doesn't want to greenlight their next season because they think it's too niche. And I want to say it's because they were wanting to talk about like missing Black girls. So like, maybe we should take a wider angle. And instead they decide to, they're still going to like do a little bit of that, like what happened, but they're going to specifically talk about this haunted mansion. And that mansion, as you may be making the connection, is the one from the first part of the story and one that Brittany has a connection to because her abusive mom is a best-selling author who claims that her stay at that mansion is what, quote unquote, like allowed her to see the error of her ways. Mm. Survey says that is a lie. And Brittany is going to use this investigation to basically expose her mother's lies. And then as the story progresses, like both of these, you know, Daisy and Brittany's stories, which are running parallel in the past, they kind of converge in a way that's very, ooh, okay, got it. So if you love haunted house stories, dual POV stories that confront racism for sure, but also, I kind of don't want to say other because then it's sort of a spoiler, but I will definitely tell you off the top of the bat that this is full of trigger warnings. The author actually lists them all on the first page. Definitely abuse, like child abuse. There's mentions of sexual abuse. Most of the stuff, if I remember correctly, is off page, which is great, but it is in there. But the story is so compelling. Like I could not put this down. I'm actually not all the way done. I still have like 20 pages left, but I loved it so much that I immediately knew I wanted to talk about it today. But I now need to go back and read the rest of Lizelle Sanbury because this is just such a phenomenal read.
So I kind of forgot about this one coming out. That's why I was like, wait, there's another one Lizelle has. And I was like, oh, is this the new one? The cover is amazing. This sounds amazing. And I'm like, I low-key forgot it's been out for like a year. Well,
yeah, no, it really has. Like I went to that event last year and it's, yeah. I think I wish it got more hype. So the minute I knew I was going to be on the show with you, I was like very excited to be able to put this at the top of the list because I don't hear enough people talking about it. It's so great.
Yeah, it sounds really good. All right. So I know how I'm spending my weekend.
Ta-da.
I know I have an arc, like an ebook arc of that somewhere. My Kindle.
Story of our lives.
Exactly. Yes. Okay. So the one I have, my first up is 7 Minutes in Candyland by Brian Wasson. So, you know, we live in a gig economy and sophomore Calvin has this little side hustle going on where he's selling candy. You know, he's Gen Z trying to make it work. And he keeps the candy in the storage closet at school. So he's making some solid money, but it's not all sweet. Da-doonch. The reason he's selling candy in the first place is because he's trying to save for a vacation to Hawaii, which sounds all well and good. It's like, okay, he's a sophomore in high school. Why is he trying to sell candy for a Hawaiian vacation? He wants the Hawaii vacation because he thinks it'll help save his parents' marriage. Now, irony is ironying because his parents are two psychologists who run a couples podcast and are high key about to get divorced. So I don't know what you even do in that. Like, oh, like, how does that even work? Oh, I never know that with like couples, advice givers, like people who, yeah. Anyway, so Calvin thinks the beautiful Hawaiian setting is like romantic and will be enough to make them fall back in love, to which I say, poor little Tink Tink. So Now, bless his heart. So while he's on this like noble quest, one day this girl who he has had this crush on since like forever, her name is Starling. She winds up in his candy closet and he gives her relationship advice on the guy she's dating because she comes in there like kind of heartbroken. Things are going on. And it's like the advice was good, but it might have also been given with some ulterior motives because, again, he has had a crush on this girl for a minute. So it's like, all right, Calvin, it's getting a little murky right now. So anyway, he gives her advice. She receives it. She thinks it's good. The word spreads and people start coming to him for their own romantic entanglements, as Jada Pinkett Smith would say, and his reputation as a sort of like love doctor is kind of aided by who his parents are, because remember, they have a relationship podcast. So then Calvin, ever the entrepreneur, ever the gig economist, starts charging for these sessions, and then he gets a little caught up in it. His ego takes over a little bit, and it, like, him getting caught up in it, let's say, extends to his friendships, and he turns people off, like people who he is close with. And once his parents basically confirm their divorce, he realizes he needs those same friends, those same people he kind of turned off earlier, to help him through this hard time. And so through all these experiences, his views of relationships change. And when I say relationships, I mean the full gamut. I mean romantic, familial, platonic, all that stuff. So it's a good little rom-com, you know, to look at. I love when things look at not just romantic relationships, but the other relationships too, which I think are super important in our lives. So 7 Minutes in Candyland by Brian Wasson.
That had completely slipped. I don't think I've even like clocked that title. I'm so glad you mentioned it. It sounds really great.
Yeah, someone, they, I forgot the publisher name, but they offered, the publicist offered me a finished copy, and the cover is really cute. It's so pretty. So we're,
I confess,
queens,
I saw
obviously.
Candyland and my brain went to like Candy Man and I thought it was going to be horror. And I was over here like, ooh, I'm like, no, that, no, no, Vanessa, that's not what that means. You were old enough to have played Candyland. What are you talking about? Not that that's the same thing, but anyway,
tidbits
for the people. Before we do my next pick, why don't we take a break for a sponsor? Alrighty, I am so bad about keeping my description of this next book short, so I have said that, but I'm going to try. And really, I don't even know that I need to go on very long about it, because it's one that I think a lot of people have heard of by now. I just took forever to read it, and that's The Weight of Blood by Tiffany D. Jackson. Apparently, I have decided to pick books with lots of trigger warnings, just racism, so much racism, and then all manner of other related racist bullying, slurs, also child abuse, and some violence, some very bloody, gory violence. So you've probably seen this cover, and if you haven't, it's such a good one. It's, again, bloody. Bloody is the theme, and immediately lets you know that you are dealing with a Carrie remix. Carrie, of course, being the book by Stephen King, which was famously adapted into the movie starring Sissy Spacek. And I was slow to pick this one up for reasons of, I know how this story goes reasons, which doesn't really make sense because I love an adaptation and a remix, but it just, I don't know, it took me a while to get to it. And when I finally did, I felt like when I watched Game of Thrones for the first time 7 years after the series debuted, and I wanted to walk around telling people, like, shame! Like you're very late to this party, the ass. Like, what are you doing?
Serious?
Oh, I was, I got swine flu and watched 7 seasons of television in like 3 weeks and was very like, hey, y'all, remember, the North remembers. Remember, it's like, well, we remembered and forgot. Like, go away.
By this time, that's amazing.
That is how I feel about this book to some extent. But now that I've read it, I'm like, this book is genius. Like, why are more people still talking about it, I guess.
We actually did a, I don't know if you caught it or if you remember, whatever, but
I
did a book club pick, a read of this not too long after it came out. I think 2022 for Halloween-ish.
Yep.
Yes. You're right. We got it. I'm on the same page. I see.
Well, that gives me even more reason to like kind of keep it short, because there is a whole book club episode. We will link to it. You can listen to it. But yeah, it's basically, you know, what if we made Carrie, but instead, A, make the book read like a true crime book, like it weaves in podcast episodes and news reports and sworn testimony. And it's definitely doing the story in reverse. Like, you find out from the very beginning that something really bad and bloody happened on a prom night and that Maddie did it. The podcast referenced in the book is called Maddie Did It, and it is sort of reconstructing what happened. Maddie being a biracial teen in Springville, Georgia, who just go back and listen to their episode. Mm. But it is, what Tiffany D. Jackson did with that, I don't even know how people's brains work in those ways and make those connections, mm. but I'm so glad that they do like to take this story and go, no, what if we made it about mm-hmm. a biracial teen who goes to a school that still has segregated proms and like a horrible, horrible father who has made her absorb those feelings of, you know, racism and colorism for herself, and like the explosive effects that something like this would have on a girl who's just daily subjected to the worst parts of humanity. Mm. So good. I want to put this in everybody's hands. Like, I cannot, this is probably one of my favorite sort of remixes of an mm-hmm. existing work that I've read in a while, for just what a deep analysis of social issues it does in this really compelling and very bloody, very like retribution type of story. Mm-hmm. So yeah, please go listen to that episode and read the book. It's so, so good and really phenomenal on audio because of that
yes.
format. Like, it's just, you really will forget sometimes that you are listening to a book and not a podcast. It's that good. So anyway, love it. I'll shut up. The Weight of Blood by Tiffany D. Jackson.
Oh my God. Now I want to kind of reread it. The audio book is excellent because of the podcast.
Full cast. I love a full cast.
Yes. And I will say too, one more thing on The Weight of Blood. I will say, I usually, just my personal thing, for whatever reason, I don't really like whodunits. I don't like knowing the I like to be surprised. I don't super like, sometimes I do. I it's probably just if it's
done well.
Depends
on the person doing it. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Like, now that I think about it, I have read some things and I'm like, oh, you know, I've been watching the TikTok Risa Tisa. I don't know if you heard about sis. And she,
thanks
so
to your
I will,
newsletter I did.
Oh, okay. Also, did you, real quick, this is important to this podcast.
Breaking news.
Breaking news. Breaking in books, breaking in podcasts. What episode are you? I had to finish it last night. I stayed up till 2 a.m.
I still have a lot more to go because I thought it was, I really did think it was hyperbole that someone yeah. said, oh, this is like a 50, no. you know, video series. I was like, oh yeah, they 52. Probably don't mean that. So no. I am now moving on instead to like a YouTube, somebody like compiled them all in one. I'm gonna do that.
Okay.
So we swear this little breaking thing is related, which is that like a whodunit, if you will, yeah. or a thing where you know the outcome already mm-hmm. Can be really interesting if it is not set up otherwise. Like, if all you do is put the thing that happened at the beginning and then just tell the same story the way you would have, like, that's, I don't think, all that interesting.
Yeah.
But when you slowly reveal pieces of information, make people's allegiance to characters shift when they dig into the nuance of each of the characters and like what their particular motivations and just and that's what Tiffany Jackson did here. There's still, I like also that she doesn't let anybody off easy. Like, there's mm-hmm. not necessarily like, you're a good person now at the end and you know who I'm talking about, I think. But
absolutely. I forgot.
But there is definitely name. Like a, oh, but also it's, you can just change. You can be a good person and it's never the wrong time to do the right thing. But anyway, go read this. It's bloody and good. And I mean, it's when so I, good. I didn't think it was going to be that kind of bloody. And I was like, yes, finish him. Anyway.
Really good. Get her again, Jade. Get her again. Yeah. So good. Okay. Yes.
We should podcast more often. Tell us about your next pick.
Yes. So my next pick is titled Out of Body by Nia Davenport. I briefly mentioned this during, I think, my latest extra credit episode, and it was just to say that it was coming out newly. I didn't get too much into the description. So this is about Megan, who is 17. She lives in Atlanta. And she's not very sure of who she is. She, you know, and that's understandable at this age. Like, the 17 to 22 time for a lot of people is like when they're trying on different identities. And that's kind of like what she does. Yeah. She kind of hops from different social groups, trying to find which identity, which group suits her best. Then she meets this girl, Elsie, who kind of like appeared as if from heaven, like from the gods, because Elsie is just all that Megan wants to be for herself. She's charismatic and she just has this like big it girl energy. So they become besties. But again, as with the Candyland, you know, it ain't all sweet. So one funky morning, Megan wakes up and eventually realizes that she's not Megan anymore. She's Elsie, and Elsie has stolen her body. Gag. Megan tries to get her to switch back. She's like, hey, girl, can you imagine that? Like, hey, girl, like, so, you know, I wasn't even going to say anything. But like, could you give me my body bag? Like, twirls
no.
her hair. Not yet. Exactly. No. She kind of like ignores her. And she starts to just assume Megan's identity instead, like starts to melt into Megan's life, right? And Megan is trying to adapt to this new reality, because you can't just go around being like, oh, actually mom and dad or whatever, like, I'm actually Megan, but even though I'm in a different body, but I'm Megan. So, you know, she has to make some concessions. So she starts to get used to living in this body. And then she realizes, like, you know what? I really never knew this girl, Elsie. I really don't know her. Not for real. Not for real. And what's more, there are people after Elsie, meaning that they're now after Megan. And I'm just like, I kind of almost applaud you if you have enemies like that at such a young age. I'm like, what are you into? What have you been doing? I'm just like, that's kind of amazing. I'm like, I almost want, like, I don't want that smoke, but I have moments of drama. I'm like, what were you into, girl? Like,
fantastic observation.
You know what I mean? I'm just like, yes. What you been getting into? Like, so she's trying Megan, now Elsie, or just girl named Jade. She's trying to find her way back to her body, her old life, of course. But she's also starting to lose herself. So there are some interesting observations there. I will leave you to read the rest to get to the bottom of how and why Elsie swapped bodies. But we'll just say that I live for the plot twists and the fast pace of this one. So there's that. Again, that's Out of Body by Nia Davenport.
Yep. Adding that to the list immediately. Yep. I say this on every podcast and or like opportunity I get to, but like being in this job is wonderful. But what it will absolutely do is destroy your TBR, because you are constantly either editing people's content, talking about content, listening to other people tell you about their favorite content, and every day it grows. So yeah, here we are. Mm-hmm. Sounds great.
It's real out here.
I love my next pick so much. It's witchy. It's planty. You know, personally, I'm a plant killer, but I like to think that I would not be. And I've kept like two alive. But anyway, this book is so just botanical and again, witchy and lovely. And also this author. So that book is This Poison Heart by Kaylin Barron. Kaylin has been writing so much. Let me give me a second to catch up with your catalog because they are the author of, or she is the author of Cinderella's Not Dead, You're Not Supposed to Die Tonight. She has a story in Night of the Living Queers, which is this really awesome YA horror anthology. And then another story called Mermaids Never Die, or in the anthology called Mermaids Never Die. And I want to, oh my gosh, I think there's definitely a sequel to this book. And I want to say has another one coming. Like, there's just writing and like writing such phenomenal work. This one is about a young woman named Briseis, who I love because it's a name from mythology. She has a gift, which is that with a single touch, she can grow plants from tiny seeds to being fully bloomed. She's kept the power kind of to herself. She hides from most people other than from her adoptive mothers. And she's been kind of trying to hone and harness the gift, but she's had what I like to call some planticular mishaps. I'm way too proud of what is not all that cool a word, but she refrains from testing them out too much, lest she cause even more harm than she already has in the past. And then one day, Briseis' aunt dies, and she leaves Bree a dilapidated estate in rural New York. So Bree and her moms hope that, surrounded by plants and flowers, that she'll finally learn to control the gift. But this new home, because apparently I came here to talk about haunted homes, is sinister in ways that they never expected. It comes with a set of instructions. There's this walled garden that is filled with like the deadliest plants in the world and generations worth of secrets. So there's more to this sudden inheritance than Bree was, you know, expectant or ready for. But she's determined to figure out what it all is and cover it and make sense of it. The sequel is called This Wicked Fate, which I have not yet read, but I'm excited to get to. So again, if you want like a haunted house story, you love plants, witchiness, communing with nature, getting to see black girl magic, and also just has fall vibes in ways that I don't know, or I don't even remember if it's set in the fall, but I read it in the fall and it felt perfect for that time of year. I would read it any old time, of course, but such a good story. I love it. And again, stunning with the cover. It's just so, so great. So anyway, pretty. really, really phenomenal. I want to read it again. That's This Poison Heart by Kaylin Barron.
I have a question for you, Vanessa.
Please.
Because I got a witchy book in the shout out section, like if we have time. Mm-hmm. But while we're on the subject, if you were in a fantasy book, YA, let's say, and you have powers, what kind of witch would you be? Would you be a plant witch, an elemental? Like what, telekinesis?
The number of times I've asked myself this question.
Yes, and I know.
The answer is always like, what kind of problem am I having right now? Or there's times when I'm like, no, I would love to have like botanical magic, especially if that meant that I could make plants do literally whatever I wanted, whether that's like bloom and be beautiful or like attack that man.
Attack him.
Or, eat
him.
Whatever.
Or don't eat them. Yeah.
Correct. And there's other times when I'm like, no, I'd want elemental magic. I would want to be. It really just depends on like what's going on. But the plants in particular, for whatever reason, just really speak to, my like witchy. I would also like use it to probably open like an apothecary. And
because
that's where my lane absolutely. I want to live my best practical magic life, but like more diverse. I'm a diverse.
You circling back.
Let's circle back. Yes. Yeah. But so yeah, probably something along those vibes. But again, catch me on a day when like I have another problem and I'm like, no, I need to be able to like turn red lights green. But what would you choose?
Oh, I think I would want to be other things, but I'd probably be like water, like a little water witch. Ooh, just like a little, water. You know, go with the flow. I feel like that's probably basic. There's probably something else more interesting, but I'm like, because right now I know I couldn't be a plant witch, even though that sounds so romantic to me because plants die, honey. They look at me, they're like, there's a dead.
Witch use death.
Witch, they're like, a dead plant in my corner right now that I'm looking at. But that's my cat. That's my cat's. She ate the, she dug up the roots. Yeah. She's a little gremlin. Yeah. But yeah. Excellent. Oh my god, amazing. Oh, speaking of more magical things, the next book I have to recommend is Infinity Alchemist by Kaysen Callender.
Yes.
Kaysen be doing the darn thing.
Yes.
And so if you read anything by them, you know that they write bangers. So this is for the dark academia lovers. So it follows Ash, who lives in a world of alchemy and class divisions. So a little interesting, you know, observations on social structures and hierarchies and things like that. So he wants to practice and learn alchemy, but is rejected by the elitist Lancaster Mages College. And so becomes the groundskeeper for the school instead, so he can be on his sneaky time and learn alchemy in secret. So, but then you get big old messy Ramsey, who is a very talented apprentice, about the same age as Ash, like late teens or so. Ramsey discovers Ash in the act of, you know, trying to learn alchemy and decides to get something out of it. So they say that they won't tell on Ash if he helps them find this book called the Book of Source, which is supposed to be this sacred legendary text that can give its owner all this power, right? So naturally, Ash is like, you know, don't tell 5-0, whatever. And this, so they start to work together. And it gets a little heated, if you know what I'm saying. But it also gets a little dangerous, okay? Because, like, obviously, like, the Book of Source, you know, people are trying to guard it. Other people are after it. There are all these dangerous alchemists standing in their way. And one of them just might be Ash's trifling daddy.
Ooh.
All right. Tears and I have spoken before a few times about the recurring trifling daddy theme in YA. It is what it is. Ash got a trifling raggedy daddy. It is what it is. So their journey takes them through this magical world that Callender has brilliantly fleshed out. And I don't know about you, but I love a magical quest.
Oh,
I love a magical little quest, little trip. Especially a magical queer quest with an interesting magical system. So I live. Again, that's Infinity Alchemist by Kaysen Callender. And Vanessa, I'd love to hear your next pick after we hear from one more sponsor.
I my voice is cracking very deeply. not as though I was about to give like a sad monologue. No, I just have allergies. But apparently from my picks, you can tell that I am very deeply in my genre bag these days for reasons of the world being trash at every turn. So yeah, I have another book that is very much in that vein. These all kind of tip a little bit into, no, kind of horror. But anyway, so that is mm-hmm. The Taking of Jake Livingston by Ryan Douglas, which is one of my favorite reads from, ooh, shoot, now I can't even remember if it was last year or the year before. But Jake Livingston is 16. He's a student at this prep school where he's one of very, very, very few Black students. And as one might expect in that situation, it means he has to navigate all kinds of, you know, everything. There's a theme: racism, microaggressions. I want to also very quickly point out, which I think is well established in this Poison Heart, that we should all be reading books about Black joy as well. Not everything has to be about racism and microaggressions. I deeply know this. I just happen to have picked some real bangers this time to talk about. But so this one day, a very handsome new student arrives at this academy called St. Clair Prep. His name is Alistair. Great name. He's another Black student. And Jake is like, wow, from the moment he sees him. Jake is gay, but he's dealing with the stress of being closeted. But seeing Alistair and spending time with him, he starts to think that maybe like a romance could be a thing in his future. Like maybe he's ready to deal with all of these feelings he's been keeping to himself. But that's not all that Jake is dealing with, because again, an accidental theme, but he also sees dead people. I literally just picked like what are some ones that I loved, and this is what I came up with.
Amazing. I love it. But I also love this one though, so
it's so good. Like so he watches the dead play out their last moments on a loop. So and he, like, there's not really much that he can do. The ghosts are generally harmless, but he's kind of learning that he's able to act as a medium and help them move on to the next place. So I really love this particular take on, like, the seeing dead people thing, because he has a role in, like, helping them finally get, you know, to rest in peace. That is until Sawyer Dune happens, who Sawyer is a white student who committed a mass shooting at a neighboring high school and then died by suicide himself. So this ghost is very much not harmless and seems to be breaking all the rules that he basically decided were the case with these ghosts. Like, well, they're not violent, they're not vengeful, they're not cruel. Sawyer is all three of those things. And he has his eyes or sights set on Jake, clearly wanting to possess him and use Jake's body, so many accidental themes this show, to commit more atrocities from beyond the grave. So he's got newfound buddy named Fiona, and then there's the aforementioned hottie, Alistair. They all hop in to assist Jake in this quest to hopefully figure out what's going on with Sawyer, defeat him, or like have him move on and to protect the people that he loves. So again, a book that is just dripping in social commentary, how everyday racism and microaggressions and discrimination are really isolating and exhausting, and that affects not just the people who that is normally the target of, but also the people who inflict it, and how the pressures of dealing with, again, you name it, are really hard for young people, and like the struggles basically that this like next generation of youth feel, and everything from having to decide their identities to people deciding their identities for them. But it is such a interesting, again, take on like the haunted, the ghosty, the reasons that people haunt, like what haunts them. It was great. It is dark, as you probably picked up. So again, trigger warnings for the racism, for violence, for also some like sexual assault stuff that again is mostly off page. But I could not stop reading this book when I was going through it. Like I meant to finish it slowly and ended up housing it, I think, in like a day and a half, because I was just like, how's this gonna go? And it went in a way I didn't quite see coming.
It also has a, did you ever watch Avatar, the animated series? It has like a little Avatar moment. You know how he would talk to his avatars that came before him? And in that moment, I was like, yes, get her, Jake! Yeah.
So much.
It was so good.
It was so good. So, yeah, read The Taking of Jake Livingston by Ryan Douglas.
Ryan Douglas has a very good Twitter name. Just a side note. Okay. Very funny.
I'm immediately going to look it up. Anyway, go ahead.
Like, you should look it up. Yes, I love that one. I think I read it in like 2021, and I still remember a lot of it. Because, you know, like, I don't know, I'll be forgetting stuff.
Oh,
like,
absolutely.
Yeah, I read that. How was it? It was good. What happened?
There were people. There was a place and a thing.
It was a thing. And then the other thing happened. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And then it ended.
And then it ended. So next one I have is Thieves' Gambit by Kavion Lewis. So back, a little while back, we made some predictions on what would be popular this year in YA, what tropes and themes and genres and subgenres and genre combinations, all that good stuff. And I remember mentioning heist because there are a couple heist young adult books coming out in 2024. So this can be added to the heist list, though it did technically come out just last year, but like at the kind of end of the year in September. Mm. So anyway, this is heisty fun. So because of that, the plot is very extra. But heists in general are extra. Mm-hmm. You already know what you're about to get. It's an extra little thing. So this is about 17-year-old Ross Quest, who comes from a long line of master thieves. And at her young age, she's basically a master thief herself. Or I should just say that she is one. The book opens up with her. She's like shoved into some small space, waiting for people to leave so she can pop out and do what she has to do. She like steals stuff with her mom all over the country, the world, really. So there's that. So despite all these thrills that her life brings, like I said, her and her mom going around the world stealing things, XYZ, and her whole, you know, line of thieves that she mm-hmm. descends from, she really just wants to be, she just wants a normal life. Like, she just want to go to camp. She's like, can I go get a McDonald's and like watch TV? I just want to be on TikTok, bro. Like, that's, I'm not it. Trying to steal like Fabergé eggs or nothing like that. Like, she just want to have a seat. So she's trying to leave the life. And then her mom gets kidnapped and held for ransom. To get the ransom, to get her mom free, she has to enter a contest. Now, here again, a little extra. Contest is called the Thieves Gambit. And it's a contest where the top teen thieves compete by carrying out heists. Where they could die, I should say. That's a big thing. It's like they could, you know, you could die. By the way. So like I said, it's very extra, but it's fun. There's also a potential boo thing, a longtime rival. And again, I think it's amazing to be so young and have a rival, like a nemesis. Like, girl, what are you doing? Well, we know what she's doing. She's stealing stuff. So there you go.
Like, well,
she's stealing stuff around the world. So that will, you know, that is rival inducing. And it has other heisty hijinks. Like, it's a whole bunch of fun. Like, it's a little heist, you know? Again, that's Thieves Gambit by Kavion Lewis. I want to say too, correct me if I'm like off base, but I like seeing a diverse, to put it, let me stop. I like to see this type of genre and things happening with more diverse authors and with diverse characters. You know what I mean? Like, you know, it's getting dicey. It's fun. It's like a lot going on. I can see this being adapted. You know, Netflix likes.
Yes.
You know, Netflix goes to Goodreads to get their next screen.
Oh, they definitely just like scroll point.
Like, Goodreads newsletter down. Like, please. So, yes, this is a fun one.
I'm going to give a really, 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 really fast bonus rec because it's not by a Black author, but it is by a very beautiful author named Roshni Chakshi. She's phenomenal. But the Gilded Wolves series, which is also heisty, if you want to talk about extra, do it on audio. It takes place during like Belle Epoque Paris. And what some of the characters go straight. I can't even decide. It sort of sounds like the chef on board Little Mermaid. Like, one of the characters' name is Severin, but every time he says it, he's like, Severin. It is the most dramatic, heisty. There's like a secret legacy and magic, yes. And it's like beautiful. They do like fabrication magic. So anyway, Roshni Chakshi is just a beautiful like human, but writes really good books. But that heist, talking about extra, go look it up.
Yes, that's a perfect yes. Please. Okay, listen. My Goodreads TBR screams.
I know.
It screams.
We have time for our little shout out section if we make it very brief?
Yeah, we got some little time. Mm-hmm.
I will keep mine very, very brief because I know I've been talking for a while, but two others. So I was going to talk about the book that Tirza recently recommended in her last episode or one of her recent episodes of Hey YA Extra Credit, which is Escaping Mr. Rochester by L.L. McKinney, who you may know as the author of Nubia and The Blade So Black. That's not what the series is called. That's the book, the Nightmareverse series. But it's basically a reimagining of Jane Eyre, where Jane Eyre and Bertha Mason, kind of getting the spoilers here. Do I need to give a spoiler for an old ass book? But I don't even know if I'm allowed to say what I just said. We will beep it if I need to. But they join forces to save each other from Mr. Rochester. And it is queer and delightful. And that is all I will say, because again, there's a whole episode about the book, more or less. But another one that I really wanted to give just a quick shout out to is this anthology called Wild Tongues Can't Be Tamed. It's by Saricia J. Fennell. She's the founder of Bronx's Reading and sits on the board, or at least did, I don't know if she still does, of Latinx in Publishing. But it's just an essay and poem collection by and about people from the Latinx diaspora. And it does the all the stories and poems just sort of confront myths and stereotypes about the community, everything from discussions of religion and identity to like topics that are taboo to even discuss within our community, and to understand that we are diverse, that we're not a monolith, that like, for example, when you say Black and Latinx, those are not mutually exclusive. There are Afro-Latina people. Please remember that, more folks. So anyway, yeah, it's a really great connection that kind of brings a lot of that home. So go look that up. That is amazing. By Mauricio J. Bunnell. Yeah.
Yes. I have a couple shout outs too. I have another little witchy ditty called The Making of Yolanda La Bruja by Lorena Villa. Yay. And this is a basically a young bruja trying to come into her own, but also protect her community because someone shows up at her school and his vibes are funky vibes. He's not, you know, his aura is not given what it needs to give. So there's that. And then also a nonfiction, because I always say I'm going to read more nonfiction and I usually fail in terms of how much I want to read. I'm not trying to attack both of us, but I am attacking both of us. This is Freedom, the Story of the Black Panther Party by Jenna Grace Martin, Joshua Bloom, and Waldo E. Martin Jr. And I think it's pretty self-explanatory. It's a non-fictional account of the Black Panther Party. Mm. The major players, Huey, Bobby, Eldridge, Kathleen, some of them are messy, one of which I just mentioned. But, you know, it's
Black history Panther is messy.
Group. Yeah, history is messy. And I just want to say real quick that kids get free breakfast in schools because of Black Panthers. Mm-hmm. Can I just say
one
that
of
real
my favorite
quick?
Facts.
Yes. Yep. I'm like, did you know? And they were trying to, they being the powers that be, the man. I have my fist raised right now. I'm just like, the man, because you got to fight the man. Let me stop. Mm-hmm. They were trying to stop them, like convince white people that they shouldn't accept the free food that they were trying to give, like the Black Panthers were trying to give people for their kids so they would have breakfast if they couldn't afford it. I just want to say that real quick.
Yep.
All right. I just want to put that out there. So yes, those are my shout outs. So I feel like that's our show today.
Yeah, there's thankfully so much more great diverse books now than there used to be. And again, this is a thing I feel like I say on just about every piece of media I record, but these are books that when I was young I would have loved to have seen. Just have folks that didn't all look like one kind of person. And it's so great. There's still plenty of room and work to be done in publishing as far as diversity goes. But just this, I mean, the fact that we were arguing over like how much time could we take to talk about more and more books is such a nice problem to have, that these are all such wonderful pieces of literature, such wonderful authors. And I hope we get even more and more and more in the years to come.
For real. Excellently said. I agree 100%. So thank you for tuning in this week. Please leave feedback about the show on Apple Podcasts to let us know how we're doing and to help others find us. Email us at heyya@bookriot.com. And don't forget to visit bookriot.com for newsletters, more podcasts, and all things bookish. Thanks again to today's sponsors for helping make the show possible. And thanks to our awesome audio editor, Caitlin Braim. You can follow me on Twitter, don't judge me y'all, at @Erica_EZE_. And Vanessa, where do you hang out?
I share your shame about being on Twitter, but look, it's just where the mess lives. It's and just, also on Instagram, both at the same handle, which is Buenos Dias SD, where the Dias is like my last name.
That's so clever. I love it. All right. Thanks for being on. It was so fun.
It was a great time. Thank you. Hey, yes. Wei, we'll be back in a couple of weeks. Thank you again for listening. We'll catch you then.